You're listening to the Donuts and Top Cow podcast.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for listening. I'm John Grigas, one of your hosts.
And I'm Josh Crawley, the other host.
We established this podcast to appreciate the Top Cow universe, which has changed quite a bit from when it was first developed, and hoping that you might be able to move through the universe with us as we look at all things Top Cow. First, I want to give a shout-out thanks to Derek Coward of the Comic Book Noise podcast and network for welcoming us into the Comic Book Noise family. We hope to live up to the great shows that they've got going on there. Donuts today. Josh, we have donuts every time we go. That's kind of the first order of business, and today we picked them up from Speedway, have some vanilla iced Long Johns and some sugared donuts, and hoping to find something a little better that's open, but you know, sometimes the gas station is where you grab your donuts.
Sometimes gas stations have really decent donuts. Or in the case of Wisconsin, not very great apple fritters. Sometimes I have to go to Oklahoma for a tasty apple fritter.
Ooh, well, next time you go there, you should bring some back next time you go.
I would have, but this last trip back, actually, they were all out, and we stopped multiple places.
Also want to thank Westfield Comics in Madison, Wisconsin. If you are not in the Madison area, you may be familiar with Westfield from its online presence, being a pretty large mail-order company at westfieldcomics.com. But we are recording right now from the east side location of Westfield Comics, which Josh happens to be the manager of. So we're thankful for the space and for the services that they give us. Now we're going to take a little look into the Top Cow universe, and I guess the question I've got, Josh, then, is how did you first get into Top Cow books? We kind of knew that you were digging a lot of the Witchblade stuff and a lot of the Ron Mars stuff, and about the same time I started getting into it. But what was your, or kind of what hooked you onto the Top Cow universe?
Well, I guess what really hooked me, hook, line, and sinker, would have been the Ron Mars Witchblade stuff, though not right away, actually. It took me a while, mostly because I wasn't reading. I didn't go, oh, Ron Mars is writing this, I'm going to start reading it. It was probably around issue 100, I think, where I really really got hooked, like a Cenobite with hooks and chains, or buy a Cenobite nut. Yeah. Previous to that, though, I had read Cyber Force way, way, way back in the day. My first introduction to Witchblade was actually Witchblade number 7. Beautiful Michael Turner cover with Sarah Pizzini kind of wrapped in a shredded white evening gown dress dealy and really pretty marble lion looking thing behind her. And I kind of kept up with Witchblade off and on for a while. But yeah, it was really Ron that hooked me.
Which is funny because for so many years, Top Cow was known for really beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
And the artwork really drove the books a lot more than the story, it seems, until Ron Mars took it over. Now it's very story-driven.
Yeah, I guess I'd agree for the most part. There's probably, and you know, not to offend anyone, to say, oh, there was crappy writing before. I mean, there was always, you know, name writers there. Paul Jenkins, for the longest time, seemed to be writing actually quite a number of books there. But, yeah, it seemed like there was maybe a refocusing at some point about the time they brought Ron on that really boosted everything.
And maybe that's the turning point for me. I haven't read a lot before Ron Mars came on, and it seems like they took a lot of different characters and storylines and said, how can we build a universe and find a greater theme between these characters than just they're all in the same world?
Yeah.
And so it seemed, because of that, anybody who's a real, you know, continuity wonk really kind of has fun to see how all these storylines are coming together, some of these other Top Cow characters. And that's been a focus. As I say, I haven't been really aware of anything except the reputation. And for a long time, Top Cow was known as basically some place to go to look at some really beautiful artwork. And now it's a place to get beautiful artwork still, and it's becoming known for its writing, which we will get in the, as the show goes forward, we will start reading some of what they're calling now, it's like Witchblade Origins now, is that the...
Witchblade Origins would be the original Witchblade stuff, primarily with art by Michael Turner.
Yeah, and I think we should definitely tap into some of that work as we go through with this podcast, but right now we're going to stay with the current stuff for the most part. I got into Top Cow from another podcast where the publisher for Top Cow kind of made a challenge. They talked about two things, and this was when all the companies were going up to $3.99 books, and they did a big marketing push that all of their books are going to stay at $2.99. And he was saying not only for the price, but it was kind of a challenge that for $2.99 we're not only give you the same great books we've been giving you, but better stories than what the big two, DC and Marvel, are doing right now. Just jump on with me and give me a chance. And so at that point, this was, I think, November of 09, I decided to go for it and jump in, and I made a year commitment and said, I'll just buy Top Cow for a year, and it's really been the book that I've enjoyed the most. I started off with the trades because they did a dealer incentive trade for what now is Witchblade Volume 1. For $4.99, so I, you know, came into your store and said, well, I'll give it a try. And I started off reading Witchblade in trades from that point. And it took about 8 trades for me to catch up to about the current level that it's at now. But it's been a lot of fun. And the Witchblade stories have also touched into some other Top Cow titles. I haven't read any Darkness. I haven't read some of the other books, but they've shown up as characters in Witchblade enough that I know enough about them that I'm starting to branch out into some of that, which brings us to Artifact Zero.
Artifact Zero. It was a free comic book day book this year. Wait, this year? Yes, this year. Speaking of years, I think it was November 2008.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been that long.
Wow.
That you first put your toe into the waters of the shiny, shiny Top Cow Lake. I don't quite know what that means, but that's okay. So yes, we have Artifacts Zero.
And that was a free comic book day. You can pick up Artifact Zero in a couple of places. I would recommend you check out your local comic store. A lot of times some of the free comic book day stuff gets rolled into the inventory in the back room, and your LCS might have a copy that they'd be able to throw your way, because it really is a useful tool to get started with both the Top Cow universe and the Artifacts story. If you don't have an LCS nearby, or if they're out, you can get a digital version for free at drivethroughcomics.com.
And that's DriveThruComics.com. Hope we don't get sued for that one.
Well, how can? We're giving a free plug, you know? How can you go wrong?
Well, I was thinking the .com part, you know.
Oh, okay, I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah, Yahoo, who knows?
Yeah. We're back to donuts.
donuts.
So Artifact Zero starts off with character Aphrodite 4, who is a, I don't know, how would you describe her? A cyborg with a spirit, or?
I don't know if they ever quite explain that part. She's a killing cyborg. Not quite the hunter-killer variety, for those of you that may be familiar with that book from Top Cow. She looks very, very similar to an older Top Cow property, Aphrodite 9.
Well, she's clearly a killing machine. As we open up Artifact Zero, she is in a holding tank being deprogrammed/reprogrammed, which is apt to be the case. We've seen her a few times over the last few years. The last time fighting the Witchblade, and she gets pretty much beaten up after her missions, but then she goes back in, gets repaired, gets back into the plasma tank, and reprogrammed for the next mission. As we open up with Artifact Zero, somebody unknown to us has possession of Aphrodite 4. She's in the tank, and the briefing that takes place is really why this issue is a great tool. She gets briefed on each of the artifacts, and tell us what you know about artifacts and kind of like what that means.
There are 13 artifacts when brought together could bring about the destruction of everything. The artifacts themselves, we've seen some. Some have not been around quite so long. In the Top Cow universe, you know, most of it centers, well, I guess around the ones we know the best, Witchblade, Darkness, Angelus. There's a bunch of other ones you may or may not be familiar with. The Spear of Destiny that the Magdalena wields. The Blood Sword. Wheel of Shadows. I'm not listing all of them off here. That would be no
fun.
Yeah,
we'll go through each one of these in order, but it's been kind of neat how they've taken, I'd say, the two most popular titles that Top Cow's had in the last few years has been the Witchblade and the Darkness. And they found some unique ways to bring them together. And what they've done then for these various characters or magical items or mystical items is say that each one of them has a place in the universe and they're scattered around the world, which is for their safety, but also so they can provide balance in the world. And to come together, as Josh said, would create some big trouble. So they named the first of the artifacts the Witchblade, and that's the first one that Aphrodite IV gets briefed on.
The Witchblade almost always chooses a female as its host. I say almost always because there's a few twists and turns where a female doesn't always have it. Throughout time, there's been many, many bearers. So actually, I believe at one point there was... There was a Bearers of the Blade one-shot. But also throughout much of the... especially the Ron Mars stuff, Ron will show glimpses of other bearers and what it was they were doing. Bearers is the person that has the Witchblade.
Would you call the Witchblade a curse?
Some people might feel cursed. I suppose if you can't get rid of it and you don't want it, that's a curse to that person. Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was cool that came up, and I don't know if Ron Mars developed this or if this was in... if this was in her makeup from the beginning, but the Witchblade is the offspring of the Darkness and the Angelus. And that, you know, they got together at the creation of the world and created the Witchblade as the balance between the Darkness and the Light. And it's currently held by Sarah Pizzini, which they did not reboot the Witchblade when Ron Mars came on and did this, because Sarah Pizzini was still the, like in Witchblade number one, Sarah Pizzini was... getting, I guess not in number one, but in that first story arc, that's where she came to get the Witchblade.
Yes. New York City detective Sarah Pizzini. And yes, Ron, I believe Ron was the first one that introduced the concept of the Witchblade being the offspring. Roundabouts, Witchblade 100. Don't quote me on that.
I started with Volume 1 as far as being introduced to the Witchblade, and I guess I recommend that, especially... the price point's great.
Yeah.
If you can find if you get it at a comic shop, you can get it for $4.99. If you get it from Borders or a bookstore, yeah, it's a little higher than that. But it's worth seeking out your local comic shop to get a copy of that.
Yeah, that's it. Also, that would be Witchblade Volume 1 by Ron Mars, not Witchblade Origins or I think some of the other trade paperbacks have been retroactively titled in the distribution system as Witchblade Classics, but Witchblade Volume 1 also corresponds to Witchblade Classics Volume 10 by Ron Mars, so that helps any of y'all out there.
And now they're up to, well, they did 8 trades, and then they've got now
Witchblade Redemption Volume 1, which actually Artifact Zero picks up pretty much right from the last page of that trade. With the Aphrodite IV stuff, because there's an Aphrodite IV Witchblade team-up for a couple issues in there. Though team-up might be a little misleading. They fight each other, too. It happens.
And then beyond the Witchblade, there's a character. If you read Witchblade, you're familiar with some of the side characters, but I see her partner both as a detective and right now in a romantic relationship.
Spoiler alert.
As well as Patrick Gleason.
I suppose at the point of Artifact Zero, they are together. If you start with Witchblade 1, that would be a spoiler.
Ah, but, okay. That is a spoiler. So thanks, Josh, for that. But by the end of Witchblade number one, or volume one, you pretty much see it coming. So,
not that Ron telegraphed it, but guys like me, well, people like me, I shouldn't say guys like me. I like a bit of romance in my stuff, so I was like, oh, those two got to hook up. Ron didn't let me down.
Yeah, we were rooting for some of that, and that brings us to the next complicated character, which is the Darkness. The next of the artifacts is the Darkness, which is passed like a curse from father to son in this case, whereas with the Witchblade, it would find a different host throughout history. This is more lineal, that the current holder of the Darkness is the criminal Jackie Estacado. I hope I said that right, but I don't...
I'm totally going to trust you on that one. It sounds good to me.
But he's the Darkness. I won't spoil that, but he also has a connection to not only the Witchblade being part of what spawned the Witchblade, but also he's got a interesting... I'm not going to use the word relationship, but he knows Sarah Pizzini fairly well, and they've crossed paths several times, so that they have something more that connects them than just your general acquaintance. So,
which I would say, yeah, you pick up artifacts, you're going to find out really soon, because it's kind of one of the, we'll say it's a multi-character motivation for them.
Yeah, and in fact, we'll start off the next episode talking directly about that, because we'll kick off artifacts, get through the rest of the artifacts, but then talk about what is triggering the event.
And for those wondering right now, the Darkness is currently being written by the talented, multi-talented, multifaceted Phil Hester.
Definitely the multi-talented Phil Hester.
Not that, I suppose we didn't talk much about Ron. Ron's a great guy. Phil's a great guy, too. But we actually had Phil for a signing here back just over a month ago. And that was shortly after he was announced as the co-writer, scripter for Wonder Woman, being done by that J. Michael Straczynski guy. So if you've heard his name around but you're not quite sure, might be that. Might be his awesome fire breather.
That's right. That's out. Playing again on Cartoon Network.
Yes.
He's a busy man.
Yes, though it was a comic before it was a Cartoon Network cartoon.
So props out to Phil as we go through the Darkness. And
yes, back to Top Cow, the Darkness.
Two books worth picking up, for sure. My strategy is to catch up in trade. I'm caught up on Witchblade. I'm working on the Darkness. Once we get there, then it'll be the monthlies all the way for me through that. And speaking of monthlies, a relatively recent monthly to pop out has been The Angelus, which is the light to the Darkness. So it's basically the opposite of the Darkness, described as the eternal enemy to the Darkness.
Danielle Baptiste currently wielding the power of The Angelus. She's she's from New Orleans. And,
that's right. And a former dancer.
Former dancer.
So she crossed paths with Sarah Pizzini in the
New York City.
And the connection with Danielle is that Danielle's mother is Sarah's captain, I guess, precinct captain.
Yeah.
So they got to know each other that way. Although they didn't get to know each other through each other, but they kind of were in the same places at the same time.
Series of circumstances, sir.
And she came close. She also held a portion of the Witchblade for a couple of story arcs, and now she's off on her own, having been taken. Now, the Angelus is another different type artifact, because the Angelus is kind of a possessive spirit that over history has possessed and controlled the body that it's in.
Much more finicky than the Witchblade. The Witchblade will stay around for a while. Angelus, not always so much.
I guess it runs lots, through the bodies, I guess.
Yeah, lots of people have held it in the past, 13 years of publication history that it's been around. I'm going to say there have been at least three people, whereas Darkness and Witchblade has been one person that entire time.
Pretty stable, and that's been that recently launched. They've just put out, I think, the sixth issue.
Yep.
And the first trade, which collects those six issues. So if you get a chance, pick up the Angelus trade, because I think that's...
Trade's not out yet.
Okay.
Not yet. Soon. I would guess if you talk to your friendly local comic book store, they can still pre-order you a copy of that.
Make them get it in, because it's good. I've been reading that one in the issue form, and I've enjoyed it quite a bit. So those are the big three, I would say, the big three artifacts, yeah. Although I have a feeling that this artifact series is going to put every one of these artifacts on some pretty even standing.
Yeah.
In their importance.
They pretty much... A lot of the focus is probably just because, you know, they've been out the longest. They get the most notice.
As we go through these, again, I recommend that listeners have Artifact Zero or pick up Artifact Zero. We are going to touch base with them in our next episode. There are a couple of artifacts, however, that have their own either miniseries or you've been able to follow by. The Spear of Destiny that Josh mentioned earlier is wielded by the Magdalena, who's had her own series.
Yep. Just recently, Top Cow did put out a Magdalena Origins trade, which collects some of her early appearances in the Darkness, and I believe her first miniseries.
So that's worth some background on. I found that to be a real interesting character, kind of immersed in the Catholic Church, and the thought is that the Spear of Destiny is the spear that pierced the side of Christ. If you're up with your religion, that's. Supposedly what, you know, as he was getting crucified, he got stabbed, and the Spear of Destiny moved through as one of the artifacts. Other artifacts that have had some play in recent books, the Glacier Stone and the Ember Stone has shown up, and those are also, basically they exist to destroy each other, don't they?
Yeah, something like that, which seems kind of counterproductive. We're going to make these things to destroy each other, but... My guess would be, as time goes on, maybe we'll figure out a little bit more about those and why they were designed as such. I want to say those first appeared in the Broken Trinity miniseries,
which
also
is
written by Ron Mars.
So that's a pretty good one. And then the one that's ongoing now, and that's Pandora's Box, is another one of the artifacts. And there is a miniseries going on right now. About the hunt for Pandora's Box.
Also, and it is very heavily featuring Glacier Stone and Ember Stone.
So they roll through. So get up on those guys, and you'll be right in where you need to be for artifacts.
And if you... Some of you may have heard of The Rapture, wielded by a guy named Tom Judge, whose publication history, as far as I can tell, gets a little goofy with just what it... references and this and that, but that is in print and available as a trade, I believe. Tom Judge, The Rapture.
And he's a defrocked priest banished to hell, and then in the beginning of Artifacts, or just before it, he pretty much comes out of hell because there's some trouble about to come on, so he's here to address what's going on.
We should probably stop there. We started talking a little more about some of those other ones. We're not going to have anything for next time.
That's true, but we next time we'll finish up. We'll actually run through the artifacts quickly in sequence. We'll assume that you've got a pretty good knowledge of the basics, at least the main characters. The ones you really need to know about right now at the outset of artifacts, the ones that will help you the most are the ones we talked about. And we'll hit on Zero, and we'll hit on issue number one. So thanks for sticking with us. I hope that this has been worth your while. We're trying to keep this right about the time it would take most people to drive to work or somewhere else, so we can join you in your commute.
Unless you have one of those long commutes. Ugh.
Well, then we'll just try to. We'll just promise a regular...
Listen to us twice.
Well, you can do that. And we'll promise a regular schedule so that you'll at least hear from us regularly. And if you want to send us email, we're anxious for feedback. This is show number one. This is our first time doing something like this. So we're anxious for feedback. Our email address is dtcpodcast@gmail.com. That's just like donuts and top cow podcast. dtcpodcast@gmail.com. And I also want to give another shout out to Westfield.
Woo-hoo!
Westfield Comics is located. There are two locations in Madison, Wisconsin. On the west side of Madison, and then on the near east side, near downtown. Google the address if you can make it into town. It's really a great comic shop. Both of them are very accessible, knowledgeable, friendly people. Work there and shop there, and it's been a lot of fun. And also, if you are out of the market, you can pre-order and get books at a pretty good discount at westfieldcomics.com. They do direct shipment and subscription service there. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Around without a whole lot to do.